Coaches, Adam Bradley here. Maybe you're not quite ready to jump all in on the Lead 'Em Up Coaches membership. You're still processing and figuring it out and talking to people. We get it. It happens. In fact, we want you to do that. Really make sure you know what it is you're jumping into, because we want you to go all in. Well, if you're processing that, here's a great place to start. Start with our Green Team Framework. It's a 7-part exercise series for a minimal cost that can allow you to introduce the framework, the 3 levels of accountability, the dynamics and nuance within our Green Team that can elevate your program. It's a great way to get started. Implement the Green Team Framework and then assess where your team is at. And if you like it, bet. Let's jump all in. If you don't like it, let us know why. We'll talk about it. But I promise you, it's going to be one of the best things you will ever do for your team.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up Podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A.
Thank you for hanging with us. I am Adam alongside Kyle. And today, Kyle, we are talking about the number one thing preventing our athletes from leading greater. The number one thing preventing our athletes from leading greater. And, you know, it's such an interesting topic because we've studied it pretty closely. We've discussed with players and athletes. We've seen it anecdotally through our observations. Time and time again, like the thing that's preventing the athletes from leading greater is ironically not often discussed. It's not often unpacked with the coaches. It's not often worked on by the coaches. And that seems crazy. Think about it, Kyle. If we identify the number one thing preventing leaders from leading greater, and for us, we would say, well, we absolutely then need to work on the number one thing. We've got to remove all barriers, remove all distractions, remove anything that would prohibit our players from wanting to lead greater, especially if I'm going to be a coach that asks them to step up to lead, that wants to see them lead greater. I should remove, eliminate, reduce all pushback, all resistance, all obstacles that would interfere with these athletes leading greater. And based on our experience, it actually isn't tackled much. It's not addressed often. It's not unpacked. It's not uncovered within the team. It's not dissected and examined with the team. And frankly, I think we're missing out on the number one thing prevention-wise that's preventing. I don't think we're working on it, Kyle. I'm not going to give it yet, no. But like, do you agree with that?
No, absolutely. I think when that's present, what often is the default is we just assume that the kids don't want to lead or they're not capable. And a lot of the times at the end of the year, we're looking back and say, well, we just didn't have the group of leaders that we needed on this year's team. But underneath the surface, the kids want to. They see opportunities to step up and lead, but there's a reason that's holding them back. And so a lot of the times we just by default assume, this is just the way it's going to be this year and let it be and hope things get better, but never really addressing that primary reason, like you said.
So if you said so often, let's talk about it. I think when we ask our players to step up as leaders, I think we need to really step back from that statement and examine it. Is that a helpful statement? Is that a accurate statement? And if it's helpful, then that implies that like that reminder of our players needing to step up to lead is what's needed. So I'd actually argue that I don't know how helpful that statement is because I don't think they need to be reminded. I think they know it. I think they want to do it. Yeah. You know, I think, okay, leaders need to step up. Is that an inspiring coaching statement? Does that actually build them up? Does it coach them up? I don't think there's really much value in it from a helpful mentoring perspective. There's nothing there. There's no depth there. And I think, once again, when you ask and examine teams, I believe on every roster, you can find a decent percentage of players. I don't, I'm afraid to even say what the percentage could be. I don't want to say half, but don't want to say a quarter, probably somewhere in between. There is a large number of players on your team that absolutely want to do right by you, coach. They want to honor you. They want to step up to the plate for you, coach. They want to step up to the plate for themselves. They want to step up for their teammates. So I think when we say leaders need to step up, I think one, we need to wrestle with the reality. I actually believe they want to. They want to. I can say, if I've got a coach kind of coaching me and pushing me and talking big goals, big visions, big dreams and aspirations of championship and wins, that is moving me to a place where I want to step up. So coaches, I think that's the first thing. I think you need to recognize there actually are players on your team that want to step up. And absolutely, we're going somewhere with this conversation, trust me, right? But that's the first thing. They want to step up. You agree with that, Kyle? Do they want to honor you?
Absolutely. I think they, like you mentioned, they want to do what's right. And they need that little bit of spark, and they need the encouragement that we will talk about here shortly. But it's definitely not for a lack of want or desire to step up and lead. That's for sure.
Here's the second thing. What we continue to find, and I'm sure you find this too, especially for, once again, let's just say this 30 to 40% of your roster, okay, that are filled with athletes, players that want to step up, and deep down, they're good kids, they want to honor you. The other thing about this is they actually want those that are maybe on the bottom half, those maybe in most desperate need of being led, they actually want them to improve. They want them to be held accountable. They want them to be called out. They want them to be challenged for their bad behavior and their selfishness. They want all those things addressed. So it's the other layer. You know, not only do they want to step up and honor you, I firmly believe they want that bottom half to be called out, addressed, held accountable, improved, elevated. They want that. Trust me, I've been in enough rooms with players that we get talking, And they will say, coach, you're going to bring that up to him? Hey, are you going to discuss that with her? Good. That'd be awesome if you could. Like, they want those people. They, you know, players don't want, especially the high performers, let's say the top half, they don't want the bottom half getting a pass. They don't want the bottom half lowering our standards. So once again, do they want to honor you? Yes, they want to. Do they also want to actually hold accountable and lead greater those bottom half that are maybe distracted? Yes, they see that. They don't like that. They don't want that in their program. They don't want that. So when you look at both sides of that, Kyle, our players want to step up and lead. They want to honor you as coach, and they actually want to rid the things that are distracting, creating unhealthiness, causing them to be pulled down and move closer to losing. They want to, Kyle.
That's why they're on the team. I mean, today's athletes, they have so many different options and choices that are out there that they could be using their time with or spending their time on than what I had when I was in high school. And if the kids are out and they're on the team, like deep down, they want to be a part of something special. They want to win. They want this to be an incredible season. So we have to keep that in mind and realize that they're not there just to go through the motions. They're there because they want something. They want to feel that lightning in the bottle. They want to feel the excitement, the energy. They want to be a part of a great team. They want to feel like they're a part of a great program. They want that experience to be memorable. They want it to last forever.
I mean, you can use the example of a classroom. Like, good kids in the classroom can't stand those that are distracting. They can't
constantly
stand
rolling their eyes.
They can't stand the problematic kids in the classroom. Yeah. They can't stand the troublemaker, the headache, the distraction. It's annoying for them. They don't want that in the classroom, just using that as an example. And they don't want it on the team. So they want to get rid of that. They want to lead. They want to honor you. So then it just opens up the question. And for us as coaches, we need to really wrestle. Then what's preventing it? And I tell you what's preventing it here in a second. But before I do, I think we need to truly reassess and reevaluate our statement of we need leaders to step up. Because I don't believe. Yeah.
When you're saying that, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes. It's like that's being you're in the locker room and you're saying that. And maybe this isn't the true for everyone, of course, but it's almost like it's deflecting the responsibility of having the leadership on the team. Like we need people to step up. And I remember one coach who would say that all the time early on in my career, like, where are our leaders? We need these kids to step up. Where's the leaders? But it was like, you guys need to do it, but I'm not going to help you, or I'm not going to give you the tools to equip you. It was like passing the blame, passing the buck without really getting to the heart of it or equipping them with the things that they need. So you're absolutely right when you're saying that is, you know, it can't happen in a way to where it's like, I said we needed it. I said we need people to do it. That's great. What are we doing to get them there? What are we doing to help those kids step into that role?
So the number one reason that we continue to find, and I'm just going to loop it into one word, the number one reason our leaders aren't, quote unquote, stepping up more for us is this word called resistance. It's resistance. It's resistance. It's resistance from their teammates that every time they step out to lead, they are met with resistance. Every time they speak up, they are met with resistance. Every time they shoot a text message to their teammates, they are met with a form of resistance. And the reality is, especially in the younger age, high school, collegiate, most athletes will not engage in what we call persistence through resistance. They won't. And if every time I step out to lead you, I am met with an element of resistance. Now, resistance is a very broad term. There's a lot, right? There can actually be like, right, it doesn't ever typically get physical resistance, but, you know, it could be statements of like, chill out, stop trying so hard, quit sucking up, shut up, bro, mind your business.
You're doing too much.
You're doing too much. You're trying too hard. Chill out, right? Man, it's Saturday morning, relax, pipe down. Why are you always trying to push? Why are you always trying to get in my business? Stay in your lane. I mean, on and on and on. All of these statements, all of these behaviors, or simply ignoring, or rolling of the eyes, or the defensiveness, or the boomerang, i.e. you call me out, I'm gonna flip it and call you out. Now it's an argument, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Because I can't own anything myself. All of these are forms of resistance. And if our players, every time they step up per your request, are met with resistance, they will eventually step down as a leader. And for right. us as coaches, what is the number one reason our players aren't leading great? It's not because they don't want to. It's not because they don't know how. No, 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 no. It's because of the resistance in the program. We teach on that specifically. It's called followership, right? It's about thinking and acting like a leader in moments others are leading you, receiving it in a way that is enjoyable to lead, that actually fills the other person with joy. This is a deeper issue on our team. And frankly, it is not discussed, examined, dissected, brought to light, uncovered, deep enough, great enough, consistent enough to change our teams. And as a result, once again, we don't have leaders stepping up. They are stepping down because the team simply resist the leadership too much. And when that starts happening, coaches, that is our fault. We are allowing a culture to exist, players' behaviors to be present in our program that are resisting those who want to help us. That is a cultural issue within the program, and it is a larger issue within the team that needs to be put on the responsibility of the coach. So coaches, next time you even feel tempted to say, we need leaders to step up, I need you one to first zoom out for a moment and examine, is the issue on my team more a leadership issue, i.e. nobody wants to do it, not the right kids, nobody's trying, doesn't have the demonstrator, the right character? Is it a individual leadership character issue? Or daggone it, is this a followership issue? Do our team and players push back? Do they get defensive? Do they resist? Right? Do they do all of those things? Do they ignore text messages over and over? All that stuff. Is that more of the issue? Or is the leadership more of the issue? And you coaches, us coaches, we need to wrestle with that.
It's the one of the biggest things, like you mentioned, that can take a team to the next level is having that higher level of followership. So when the leadership is present and it's underneath the surface, so speaking, they're sending the text message, they're speaking up at a meeting, they're pulling someone off to the side, or they're speaking up in a film session. When that resistance happens, one of the things that we talk about is it's taking away one of the leadership lives that our athletes have. And they only have three leadership lives. You know, it's not a scientific study, but for the most part, if a kid has those three leadership lives and they go and they try to lead someone up, give them a piece of advice, and they're just met with like, who are you? You're just like a freshman. You're just a sophomore. You're like an underclassman. Why am I going to listen to you? Well, one of those lives is now gone. And the psychology that starts to take place is the next time a moment presents itself, their brain is going to start speaking. Hey, remember that last time you tried to do that and they just kind of shot you down in front of everybody, or they told you it wasn't your place, or they just ignored you like that didn't feel too good. You don't want to do that again. And once you get to a certain point, like you said, Adam, is they're just going to step down and they're just going to allow it to happen. Wish it was better, but because they weren't encouraged and because they weren't supported, that potential leader has now been diminished, and their effect not only on this team, but on teams moving forward and on others for the rest of their life can now be diminished as a result of that.
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, the resistance is in many cases, the invisible killer of your leadership and your program. Oftentimes it's done subtly. Oftentimes it's done quickly. Oftentimes it's done outside of your scope. You may not see it as the coach. You may not be privy to it. That resistance to leadership is your number one leadership killer in your program. But going back to the three leadership lives that you talked about, you know, coaches, here's another way to look at that, just so you can resonate or allow it to resonate a little deeper. I mean, I always compare it to invitations to a party. You know, if I'm going to invite someone Friday night out to hang out and, you know, come over for, you know, gathering or a party, and you decline my invite, hey, no sweat. Yeah, no problem. You know, things happen, right? Maybe you're busy, whatever. So then like 3 weeks later, I'm hosting another party on a Friday night and I invite you again and you decline that one again. Okay. Hey, no problem. No problem. Hey, maybe in the future is your response, but you're taking mental note. You're like, okay, that's two in a row. Interesting. Then all of a sudden you do it again. Hey, you know, hey, I'm having another get together, cooking out on the deck. Come hang out. Oh yeah. I can't make it again. Nah, at this point it's three. And I don't know where everyone stands on this. I've actually asked many, many coaches because I bring it up in coaching clinics. When do you stop? I've read that studies say the average person stops at three invites. I always do find it hilarious in these sessions when I ask people, I'm like, are you someone who, or last question, if you're someone, raise your hand if you're someone that never stops. And you always get a few of those. I'm like, man, y'all are a rare breed. Man, y'all are a special human being. Because there are some people that do not care. They persist in the face of resistance. But oh my goodness, such small majority or a small percentage.
Yeah.
Most of them say roughly in the 2 to 3 invites. Then I'm going to pull back. I'm going to stop inviting and I'm just going to kind of do my own thing. And that is the leadership dynamic within our athletes. View it in the same way. If I reach out to text you and challenge you to, you know, hey, where are you? You know, you need to be here for off-season workouts and you ignore it. You know, I'll shoot you another text, maybe a couple weeks. Hey, where are you? Hey, you know, we're missing you, man. We need you here. Where are you? You need to be here. And they kind of ignore it or push back. I mean, maybe one more time that player will send something. But like at that point, they're eventually going to stop. And coaches, you need to take note of all the moments of resistance within our program of leadership. And I think it reminds me of rule six of the green team. You got to fight every day to build a green team. This is a great example of where you need to fight. You need to fight. And it needs to go like this. Like, hey, where's so-and-so? Like, why isn't so-and-so here? And all of a sudden you hear like two or three people like, I don't know, coach. I sent him a message earlier this afternoon. He never got back to me. Boom. Note. In my phone. Writing a note. Writing a note. How many people sent? Did anyone else send a text message? Anyone else? Oh, no. Okay. All right. Boom. Noted. Wrote it in my notepad. Next time I see that player, right? Oh, we're bringing that up. We're bringing that up. I'm going to call out their poor followership. I'm going to call out that player is ruining the leadership on our team, not only underperforming for himself. And I'm going to tell him the consequence that if it continues, he or she, that the other dynamic is when you resist leadership, you'll eventually be on a team where nobody looks out for you, where nobody has your back. They don't care about you anymore. And that's where you're going to position it in that conversation to change it from a, hey, I'm calling you out because you're in trouble, to a perceived, I care about you. And I want you to kind of grab a hold of deeper desires. It's a different angle of motivation, right? So it's not going to be like, you need to reply, right? You need to reply. You need to receive that leadership greater, right? That's more of a scolding type conversation, more of a one-way me kind of going on you. Right. Whereas I'm going to say, listen, I'm concerned. I'm concerned when you don't reply or you push back and resist. I'm concerned because it is pushing you one step closer to nobody on this team caring about you. Do you want that? Which, of course, deep latent desire, they don't want that. No one will ever say they don't want that. No one will ever say, nah, I'm good with that. I don't care if nobody, I want them not to care about me. No one will ever say that. I want them not to care about me. No. So now all of a sudden I'm going to walk them in to answering the exact way I want them to answer that will then call themselves out rather than me calling them out. You can almost say it's a manipulation in communication as you communicate it in such a way to get them to discover, right, the change needed for themselves rather than the other person scolding. It's the more powerful way when you look at it from a, you know, clinical psychology approach. And keep in mind, it is not manipulating, although it can feel that way. There is a clinical psychology term called benevolent manipulation. Right? It's when it's artfully used for the good of the other person. So we're not trying to take advantage of the other person. We're trying to utilize our language in such a way to get them to uncover it for themselves and recognize the consequence of them resisting. Those are examples of fighting for it. I'm going to call them out. I'm going to have a conversation.
Hey, this is Ashley from Chick-fil-A, and this is today's Leadership Nugget. Today, we're talking all about mindset. How do we possibly find the time to stay positive and keep an optimistic outlook when faced with so much uncertainty around us? I'll share a few tips and tricks to help you. One, remove the expectation that you have to be perfect. You don't. You have to work towards letting go of the idea that things have to be a certain way. Two, remind yourself of the glorious gift of grace. Spending time and working towards centering your thoughts will be extremely helpful in reminding yourself of God's promises. Three, extend gratitude. If you constantly focus on what you lack in life, it's hard to see the beauty of what you actually do have. What you focus on increases. It's true. And four, get help where you can. Make an active choice to rely on a helping hand from others. Positivity in your mindset is a daily choice you get to make. Choosing to see the glass as half full is all about mindset. It's simply a way of thinking. Now, let's jump back into the episode.
Just the other day during one of my sessions, Kyle, one of our guys was late. And I know for a fact, two guys on the team text him, kind of like our senior, kind of that guy, that captain of sort. He texts him right. and his six text him. And he shows up like 10, 15 minutes late or whatever. And I asked before the end of the session, right as we were all walking out, at the end of the session, as we were walking out of the session, I asked the two guys, I'm like, hey, did so-and-so, did he text you back? I know he showed up eventually, but did he like text you at all? Did he like say anything? Was there any dialogue? No. He just showed up. Okay. So he ignored the text. Okay. All right, man, we're walking from the session out to the gym for practice. Practice was after the lead 'em up session. During warm-up lines, man, I just quietly pull him off to the side. Bro, man, first of all, man, missed you at the beginning there. Oh, yeah, you know, and then it goes down the rabbit hole of excuses, typical, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know, like I couldn't get a ride and this and that and that and this. Right. And I'm just like, okay, listen. Okay, I got it. First off, man, I really don't want, you know, for that to become a trend. You know, I really don't want you to start influencing our standards getting lowered, because I really don't think you want that. Because if our standards get lower, man, all of a sudden everything just falls lower. And that's not what you want. But that's not why I'm bringing it up for you right now. I'm just asking, hey, did any of the guys text you? Yeah. They text me. What did you say back after they text you? Oh, actually, I didn't even reply. Oh, so you ignored it? Well, like, I didn't ignore it, Coach. Like, I wouldn't say I ignored it. Well, oh, but you didn't reply. Well, yeah, I didn't reply, so you ignored it. I mean, no, I read it. Oh, I know, but to them, did it get ignored in their mind? Probably. Yeah, I guess so. Okay, ignored. I'm going to tell you right now, we've talked about this long and hard because we've gone through it with that player. You better thank the passer.
Right. All right,
your guys looked out for you. They cared enough about you to try to get you here on time to kind of remind you, because they don't want to see you in trouble. They're looking out for you. They want to see good things for you. They want to see positive elements for you. They don't want to see you in a bad place, getting in trouble, losing your spot, all these different things. They're looking out for you. And I'm going to tell you, I keep almost wanting to say his name. I'm not going to say his name. You better thank them immediately, because I'm going to tell you, you are one step closer to them not caring about you. And I'm going to tell you, those two, your six and that other individual who's a leader, if they stop caring about you, I'm going to already tell you, the rest of the team's going to stop caring about you.
Right. They'll follow their lead.
And they're already partially half in, half out with you anyways. Right. You've got the two that are still holding on hope with you, man. But let me ask you, are you good with that? Like being on a team when no one cares about you? Nah, I don't want that. You sure? Like, you don't want anyone, like, you don't want it to get to that place. Nah, I don't want it to get to that place, Coach. All right. Then you better thank them for looking out for you and calling you out and challenging you. Because if not, they will stop and they will not care about you any longer, and they will let you do your own thing, and you will be on this team around a group of players that frankly nobody looks out for you. You don't want that. You better thank them today. And what I'm doing is protecting the leader. I'm saving a life of the leader. I am engaging in rule 6 of the green team, fighting every day to build a green team. Little moments like that, right? Examples of fighting, but it's the resistance that comes in a variety of different forms that will destroy the leader, and why it's the number one reason our leaders are not leading greater.
And when that happens, and when you take an approach like that, and then he goes and thanks them for acting as lifeguards, for leading and stepping out and caring about him, what he's actually doing now is adding a life to them. So instead of taking away, you're almost adding lives to that leader, because their confidence is going to grow. Just that simple acknowledgement, the appreciation, the thank you, that goes a long way for them. That builds that young leader's confidence. And now they're much more willing to step up in the future when they see those opportunities, because it was acknowledged. That's the thing. Resistance comes in a lot of different ways, but what it does is it destroys the confidence of the leader. So as coaches, when we fight for that, we're giving them lies. We're encouraging them.
Yeah. And I would say, based on my experience, we as coaches don't step in when we hear of resistance. We don't step in regularly. We will step in when it's significant or grand in its demeanor of sorts, where it's like a vulgar pushback of resistance, where it's like a yelling on the court or on the field.
It's like a full blown situation now.
It's a full blown situation where like there's major defiance, there's major pushback. It's a elevated situation, and frankly, that is good, but like you're missing it. You're missing it if you're ignoring all these other elements. You are missing it because it's the day to day, right? And I always say culture is best driven and most impacted on the day to day versus the big stuff, right? The day to day small things versus the grander every couple of weeks big thing. I think the same thing holds true here, but on the opposite side, I think this stuff gets destroyed. Not in those big moments of like pushback, you know, during practice, right? Where someone tells the other one like loudly, like, shut up, you know, like, and coach is forced to step in. It's the little moments. It's the ignoring. It's the dismissive of texts. It's the little subtle eye rolls. It's the chill out. It's the, man, shut up. Like, it's these little moments day to day in the halls, in the class, on text chat. Right. During interactions, those are the ones you got to really be alert and you've got to really be scanning and help. You know, I say this. I believe it's part of our job as coaches. Part of the reason why we don't do exclusive work with leadership councils or captains is because, you know, we think the whole team needs to be shifting their mindset, needs to be opening up their perspective to be able to receive leadership greater, learning, understanding, and being part of the language and the big vision. We need everybody. And I kind of take it on myself to say, like, I almost think it's my responsibility to prime the players to receive the leadership well from their peers. That's
great point.
My responsibility in many ways. It's to prime the players to get them in a position mentally, big picture wise, character wise, to begin to be open and receptive to the leadership of others. And you do that by just really painting the picture and the teachings of Green Team and followership and all these different dynamics, because it is a relatively close to impossible task if we think players will be successful at a high percentage, getting players out of the red into the green. That's a huge undertaking. That's a daunting task. People that are in the red are challenging even for us, and we hold the authority and the keys to what they want, playing time.
Absolutely.
So for us, right, we have to recognize, like, hey, we play a major role. So the player that ignores your text all the time, that's red, shows up late, that's red. I need to now jump in and get them positioned, get them elevated more to a gray posture. So then the players can now grab a hold and bring them up to the green, right? Like, that's my responsibility, is to help the red that does resist, that does recruit, right? Move, like, I need to be actively engaged in that, positioning them into a place where they can be brought up, scooped up, led up by those in the green. And I think that's recognizing our role. We need to address the resistance.
Yeah, if we don't, like you said, it's not just one big thing. It's that erosion from the day to day that will subtly eat the culture alive from within the program. And that's the thing that, you know, you said it a couple times already, but going back to rule number 6, every single day, there's an opportunity to either enhance it or to let it slip. And that's the thing that we have to fight for. And even if it's not something where it's maybe flat out dismissing and resisting it, it's maybe our job then is, when we see that sign of progress and growth, to really celebrate it, to encourage them in that as well as they're making those gains. So they continue to move on that scale and get further towards the green. And I love how you're talking about then when the players are in the gray, those leaders in the green, their job becomes much more easy. And we're setting them up for success. And in turn, that's really going to prop the entire team up. That's how you go from the coach-led to the player-led. Like, you as the coach have to do some work, but you have to get the players into that moment. It's like an assist, right? Setting them up for success, giving them that great pass where they're right in their shooting pocket, or they're ready to knock it down, or essentially giving them an alley-oop. That's our job as a coach there.
So coaches, here's an exercise for you. I want you to identify 2 to 3 players on your team that you know they want to lead. And maybe they are leading, right? But you know they want to lead. You know they want to be those players for you. You know they want to step up. Identify 2 or 3 of them and have a conversation with them. And here's the framework of the conversation. Ask them first. If they aren't stepping up as a leader, ask them simply why they're not, and have them give you 3 reasons why they aren't. Don't just say open-ended, why are you not? They won't know how to verbalize, articulate it. You'll cause them to need to like formulate their own thought. Just say, give me 3 things, 3 reasons why you're not stepping up as a leader. If they are stepping up as a leader, position the same question, but simply with a slight tweak. What's causing you not to step up greater? Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's causing you not to step up, or if they already are, what's causing you not to step up greater? Give me 3 things. Try to give me 3 things and hear what they say and take an examination of what they say and begin viewing it through the lens of, is it a personal ineptitude of them? They just don't know how, right? They're not competent. Is it more on that line that this is a leadership skill issue? Like, I just don't know how to, or I don't know what to say. I need tools. I need coaching on this. I've never been asked to be a leader. I don't even know where to begin. If those are the type of answers, this is a clear developmental leadership dynamic. Okay. Right. Then we need to lean in here. But if they say things like, I'm not confident. I'm a little like you said earlier, Kyle, like afraid, a little, afraid to step up, right? It's like a little bit of a fear and such, right? So a confidence or an afraid or an unsure, which kind of then would go to a confidence dynamic. You need to hear all those and recognize, okay, they are giving you the answers to the test, and the answers to the test on this is that it's more followership issue than leadership issue, right? It is. Confident. Oh, why are you not confident? Let's examine. Why are they not confident? Go deeper. Why are you not confident? They may then give you answers back to the development side, or they may give you answers more to like, I feel like every time I do, like the guys or the girls, like they always just like, they don't respond well. They laugh. They make jokes in my direction. Okay. Followership issue. Why are you afraid? Like, I just don't think they're going to receive it well. Followership issue. All right. I don't know what to say. Development issue. All right. I don't know where to begin. Development issue. Like, you've got to examine the conversation in deeper detail to understand, like, where do we need to put our focus? And I'm just going to tell you where the focus needs to go. It needs to go on both. Just FYI.
Yeah, absolutely.
It needs to go on both. Like it needs development combined with followership, right? It needs the development in the leadership and the development of followership, because the development of followership creates the environment that your developed leadership can thrive in. So they work in tandem. But what you can't afford to do is only focus on one. You can't focus on one. You just can't do it. You can't do it. Coaches, number one reason your leaders aren't stepping up greater, aren't impacting the team greater, to resistance. Resistance coming in many different forms from the team. And it is our job to try to remove the resistance, to diminish the barriers and the obstacles and the distractions that will allow then our leaders to thrive. Last thing I'll say, it kind of reminds me of in a public speaking space, one of my mentors, Steve Shenbaum. I talk about Steve quite often, owner and president of Game On Nation down in Florida, leadership organization, works with high level corporate professional. When during years of mentoring, getting mentored by him, he would talk about the need to create the perfect teaching environment. I mean, he would be obsessive about it. At the time, I couldn't get to his level of obsessiveness about it. I couldn't. I saw what he was saying, but I couldn't get to the point where I like would uncover the details as he would. He just would be so, I mean, some say OCD about it. And, sure. and it is absolutely, it's taken me time, but I've absolutely gotten there, because one of the things he said, which I now see, man, crystal clear, every distraction in the room is an obstacle you as the teacher need to overcome. Every distraction in the room is an obstacle now that you as the teacher, the presenter, the coach, the deliverer, the communicator now has to overcome. And when it's phrased, when it's phrased like that, Kyle, it resonates differently, because nobody would ever want to go into a public speaking situation with four or five obstacles already against you. Like, you would never want to do that, right?
Like, not like set up for success.
No, you're not. You're viewing it like, oh, dude, all right. Oh my gosh, I got to deal with that and that and that and that. Oh my gosh, I'm going in already, you know, against the odds here. Like, things are against me here. So you never say that. And so what he would talk about is this need to obsessively create the environment to be as distraction-free, essentially to remove all resistance from your teaching. Anything that could potentially push back, interfere, resist against it being received well needs to be eliminated, right? If there's a light glare coming in through the window that's blinding half the room, that's a distraction you have to overcome, mm-hmm. right? If there's a large HVAC heater above the ceiling in the back corner of the room and it's blowing, right, and it's loud, that's a distraction. Or, you know, if you've ever been in a room where like it's cold and you're sitting under the vent and the vent is like freezing your neck, and the whole time you're just like, oh my gosh, it's so cold. And like, you're wrapped up, right? Like, go to church with my wife. That is like literally like her thing. She's like, it's so cold in here. She gets so cold, right? If there are people walking behind you as you deliver your message, because you position the audience to have you with like a hallway behind, and now you see their eyes kind of following people as you're trying to talk, and they try to bring them back in. These are all just examples of distractions that will resist our ability, their ability to receive the message. He says, get rid of them. Remove all the obstacles. Remove anything that could be forms of resistance so your communication can be better received. That, ladies and gentlemen, is our job from a resistance standpoint. It is to examine the team almost with an obsessive level, examining every inch, moment, person, interaction, doing everything we can to remove the obstacles, remove the resistance, so then the leadership can be better well received by those that are trying to lead. It's the game changer.
And just like we say for our players, no one player can look out and lifeguard the entire team. The same is true for us as a coaching staff. And as a head coach, you need to bring more people into the fold. You can't just try to take all of that on your own. And this is where the power of language comes in, and having that common language throughout the program to where everyone can examine it, but then address it. So this is something as a coaching staff that everyone needs to be made aware of, that we can have conversations on and continually look out for what are those warning signs, and then we can address them. But, you know, as you're sitting here and listening to this conversation as a coach, you might be thinking, well, wow, that's a lot for one person to do. You're right. It is. That's why you have assistants. And that's why the best staffs have everyone on the same page, everyone working in unison, looking out for those, and then having that shared language to address those issues. So coaches, make sure you include your staffs in these conversations.
Good stuff, Kyle. Appreciate you as always, coaches. I hope this episode challenged you to be even more intentional. I'll admit for myself, it's challenged me to simply going through to elevate my intentionality with the teams that I work with, to continue to do a better job removing resistance and paying very close attention to those moments, just to really get the leaders back to look out for them. Hey, until next time, on behalf of the entire Lead 'Em Up team, I am Adam, he is Kyle. Have fun and lead 'em up.